to take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like when an AY like Ooh. When an AI goes haywire, you see my problem.
Yeah.
But then a judicious hacker sets it back to rights and its eyes go back to normal color. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. Blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard and I'm your intrepid co-host. And I'm joined this week as every week by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
I hope that's like an opposite jinx. I was excited about talking about this game and everything, and then we just stumble out of the blocks. I hope it does not portend.
I think I stumble most weeks, and I would argue the better weeks, because I put some work into it. You know, I tried to weave a narrative, to create a vision, a situation. I just got done watching Mobile Suit Gundam: The Witch from Mercury. Trey,
is that,
I know you're a
what,
Gundam Wing
OVA,
fan.
As the kids say?
No, it's a full-on series. It's great. It's about space lesbians in mechs, in robots, in fighting robots. And it's fucking really good.
If it's good, I'll watch it.
It's a lot of fun.
I am a Mobile Suit Gundam fan.
It's a lot of fun. I think you'll like it a lot, actually. It's got a lot of the same sort of... I mean, this is a whole sort of hallmark of what they do, where it's like, oh, the politics at the same time as, like, the fights and all those things. And it's also pretty concise. The pacing's a little weird, and some of the writing's not great. Also, very good dub. It was the first time in a while that I've watched a show, a Japanese animated television show, and watched the... dubs, the English dubs, the English voice actors over it, besides my furry fan Beastars, and really enjoyed it. But like the voice acting was fucking, I feel like voice actors have gotten better at the medium, and because it's become a much more concentrated form than it used to. Who cares? Who cares, Trey?
I was gonna say, yeah, to not weebify us too much, have you watched the new TV series Fallout?
No, I've not watched Fallout yet, but all of my Twitter mutuals are horny for Walton Goggins, his face.
Yeah.
You see that tweet that was like, I just want to put his dick in my mouth and chew on it like a bit of jerky.
Ew. I only saw someone say, I bet you all the other ghouls call him Smooth Face or something. It's great. It's super grind. It really eases you into the grindhouse. If you don't like gore, don't watch it at all, ever. But it really eases you into the grindhouse campiness, and you assimilate there into all the kind of lessons of the whole thing, and mixed with all the plot twists and stuff kind of culminate at the end. Very good.
Did you play Fallout? Were you a Fallout person?
I have watched many video essays about it. And I think I played Fallout 4 a little bit, like one day. I admire the world building of the game. I'm not a big fan of the mechanics, but it's a great show, I will say that. And thank you to listener of the pod, actually former guest host of the pod, the homie Steve, on his Amazon account. Thanks, Steve.
Shouts to you. All right, that's enough. Enough fanning. We'll save the rest for talking points, I guess. NBA Finals and that. Trey, I am going to pull up the Bucks game while we record this podcast. But there's so much to enjoy. Oh, my God. The Knicks are up, too. Shit's crazy. Oh, my God. And so were we on Saturday. A 2-0 victory over DC United. Nobody thought we could repeat the performance, and then we did exactly that in so very many ways. Things are starting to feel a little nice. Things are starting to feel a little nice with it. Do you think, are you experiencing a sort of a broader quieting of the Cushing out crowd, or are people still banging that drum where you're sitting?
To answer your question, certainly. It's certainly much quieter. I think you know what part of it is, I think, is that, like, he's a, I think we all know, he's an extremely, like, charismatic guy and smart, funny, like, talker. And it, that comes out much more clearly after winning games in the post-Massive Press conferences as opposed to after losing, where the sheen of charisma kind of falls flat. I think it's much more interesting to listen to him. It's not more interesting. It's more engaging to listen to him after a win and, like, kind of understand. It kind of contextualizes all the rose smelling that he's done up to this mm-hmm. point. I will say, you know, this podcast, Ever the Optimist, I do want to temper a little bit. I think it's important for us to kind of ride the waves, right? When the fan base gets a little too down, point out the positives. And also point out some of the, you know, bring us back down to earth if things get a little too high. I don't say we shouldn't enjoy wins. And certainly, it's very clear we are a much better team now than we were a month ago, as we predicted and talked about for the last 4 weeks. But I think this game was like a good, was like a positive step forward, and probably not much more than that, but still a great experience for the players and the fans and the coach and everyone involved. Notwithstanding all the external stadium stuff and everything that went along with it and the Knicks. But I think, you know, because I did go into the game. Look, we predicted a win on this podcast, but no, you predicted a tie, by the way.
I'm sure I did.
And I think that was the right, I think that was the right kind of outlook. I think I underestimated how much the yellow card accumulation that two of their players had really would affect them in this match. And I think we need to remember that we're on a very long homestand and that we should be at least in more advantageous positions in these matches, even if we're not winning them, which we have been the last three games. So I just want to temper it just a little bit. But there's plenty of positives to go around from this match. And I think first and foremost...
Well, but before we get...
Go ahead.
Before we get into that...
Sure.
I do want to, like, know what... Because we... You're right. We began every episode in the winless streak talking about why... tempering expectations and saying why this is not as bad as it seems. And I think we can get a little bit more detailed as to why this is not as good as it seems, right? Like, what were the sort of, like... What were the gaps? And even if you look at the flow of game chart, right? Like, there's more variability than you would expect from what felt like a dominant performance, and what certainly looks on the score sheet like a dominant performance. When we were out of control, who was responsible? You know, it's really not just the question. It's not the same thing as we've been talking about in terms of offensive woes. It's just like were there moments in the match where this could have turned out differently in your experience?
Sure, I think that first Benteke chance that he missed, I think on most days he scores that. That was one of their more clear chances. I think it's like a balance of understanding, like, it's a balance. I think I want to go into how we handled Benteke later, but at the same time, this team still had 11 shots and got him the ball plenty of times. It's like a halfway point, really. We're building where against Atlanta or against New England, there might have been those early crosses and balls into the box, lofted balls into the box that we just handled extremely poorly. This time we handled them well, but we still allowed those opportunities a little more often. I think we still struggle a little bit. As we said, this is a risk-reward style, and truly it is, and we saw a lot of it in this match, for the better, for the most part. I think if you're playing a high... this game was so compact. That's the whole thing. Like, it only opened up via counterattacks, not through long passes of play or anything like that. So when you're facing a team that's a high-line pressing team and you are also a high-line pressing team, something's got to give in certain moments. I just want to say we bent a few times, maybe a little more often than we would want to, but we never broke in this match. I don't think we really, outside of that first Benteke chance... And, like, yeah, they had a lot of shots, but I don't think many of them were really dangerous at all for the most part. It was a clearly one-sided match, but not necessarily a dominant match, and I'll say that. But I think the only thing we struggled with is that a lot of people, and probably rightly so, will point to how incomplete and still developing DC United team this is in terms of how they play within the system they've built. But the biggest thing I noticed about DC United, and I have to give Troy Lesane credit, especially now that he's not the Red Bulls coach anymore, is how distinct and clear and simple his style of play was. Like, I was in awe. It was awesome. It was unique. Essentially, like, obviously we had the ball. Oh, actually, I haven't even checked the possession of this match. I'm going to assume we had the ball more. We didn't. It was essentially 50-50.
Yeah.
When they had the ball, they had a clear plan in their thirds. Like, so crystal clear, more than any other team I've ever seen in this league in the last, like, few years. They were clear when they were building out of the back, where they would just try to get the ball to the midfield as quickly as possible, no matter how they needed to. And then in the middle third, super, super direct, quick, short passes. More so than we do, and that's something we want to do. And I think they did our style of midfield play almost better than us in this match. And then their final third play was really simple, and it was gimmick. I mean, that sounds like derivative and almost like negative connotation, but they were a gimmick offense, and they have to be. They have Benteke. He's amazing. And why not? All they did, they played with, I think where they failed and where we took advantage was that they tried to set up with a two-striker system, and Benteke's like, no, I think I'm the guy, and just played centrally the whole match. And they just lofted the ball to him over and over and over again, and the ball always found his head, as we predicted, and that's what they do. And they just prayed that that would work. Like, we just allowed that to happen, but you can't not let that happen. And I think that's like the benefit, right? Even though they might have been in the game at points, they were only in the game because Benteke is so good. And because they built a system that is a gimmick, that is get the ball to his head. I mean, the most fascinating thing was when they had a throw-in in the middle third in our half at any time, that's the only time Benteke would drop into the midfield. Why? Because they would throw directly at his head and he would knock it on, and it worked every single time. And it was super cool to see that. But at the same time, like, this is tape for every other team in the league. I don't think that will ever work again. In the second half of the season, I think they're fucked because you know exactly what they're going to do. I just found it, like, from a soccer tactical standpoint, like, if you're trying to teach someone what style is and what tactics are and what, like, clear choices in how you play a game and what managers do, you watch DC in this match, and I think it was fascinating. It's just that they didn't have enough quality. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were just weren't, like, good enough to finish it. And on the other hand, defensively, we were outstanding, keeping it at bay, limiting the quality of what they were building. We were
outstanding. That's what I want to know. I want to know, right? This is the question on everybody's lips. How did we shut down Benteke? What are people seeing on the tape that we did that they're going to be repeating for the rest of the season?
It became pretty clear, like, you know, talking to all the players, they had a clear strategy. Like, I found it funny that, like, in the that the way I think I put my own biases on how I thought the team would attack Benteke, on how they talked about it before the match, where I presume they would kind of be a really tight man marking on Benteke. And that's not what they did at all. It was tight marking, but as a team. And every player after the match kept saying, like, it was five of us. Well, seven of us. No, six. Oh, my God, I can't do math. 4 + 2 = 6. The four back line and Sands and Keaton, all six of them were saying, like, whoever was closest to him when a ball came in would hug him as tight as they could. And whoever was second closest to him, or whoever couldn't make the run directly to him, would back off and try to anticipate wherever a knock on or a deflection would happen. Like, mm-hmm. it was, they watched film throughout the week only on Benteke. Like, because that's what you have to do, because it is him. It's a one man wrecking crew. You can't stop it, but you can limit it as much as possible. So it was simply wherever he was on the field, whoever's closest to him, hug him as hard as you can, jump with him. You might not win, but you're going to at least put pressure on him so that he will not direct the ball wherever he wants, and then you have someone else anticipate where that's going to go. And because you don't have to worry about the other players on the team, or you just... You do that with the understanding that we're going to let someone else beat us and not him. And guess what that led to? It led to Benteke's lowest expected goals of the season in this match. Which is funny, because even after this match, he still leads the league in expected goals per 90. It led to his lowest aerial duels won of the season. And of course, we say he leads the league. He has 100 after this match. He has 100 duels won, and second place has 40. He's still a fucking monster, but we limited him more than any other team has this season in aerial duels. And it's because Thiago Martins is huge, Burke Reese is tall, Keaton Park's huge, James Sands aggressive. And, like, directing all that energy into knowing that that's how you're going to attack him, you're not going to let him get the ball to his feet. You're just not. Even though he's maybe even more dangerous as an aerial threat, you're not even going to consider a secondary option. You're going to really try to overcommit to that style of play. We really did handle him better than any other team has this season. And I think you can argue about the supporting cast they had was not as good because of suspension and injury. At the same time, they still got the ball to him all the time. And it wasn't about limiting his service. It was about limiting him personally. And we did it extremely well. I would say this was Thiago Martins' best game of the season, bar none. I mean, how can you not say that? He limited one of the most dangerous attackers to the league to their worst performance in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's 100% fair. I think that I think that across the board, this was like a performance that isn't just about the score for this match only, but rather about, like, I mean, as you described it, right? Like, a defense executing a strategy really, really successfully in a way that requires a ton of alertness, readiness to trade off, strong predictions, and trust. And this is a thing I think that we've been seeing develop over the last few matches, is that mm-hmm. sense of trust and unity. And this just feels like a really climactic moment for it.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, before the game, I felt like perhaps Tavon Gray might have been a better idea, just as another defender to limit their service into the box. But we decided to go with Micha because... firstly, like, the amount of pressure we put on their back line was really important in this match in terms of creating opportunities for ourselves. And Micha in that first half played higher than he has all season. And I think that that's like that idea of, like, we have to play our style, like trust in the plan we have for Benteke himself. And then after that, we have to develop offense. Like, we still have to prioritize what we're building for this season. We can't just wait to try to develop an offense for this team. And I really appreciate that. I mean, this was our biggest expected goal differential match of the season. And I think it was pretty clear, because when you shut down their one-way highway, it becomes, you know,
you have to go up their Hershey highway.
And we did.
And we sure did.
And yet again, just another... Of course, this was just another example of what we notice every time we play at Citi Field, which is set up wide and play through the middle. Like, mm-hmm. Micha working so high up the field allowed Hannes Wolf to be the inverted winger we want him to be and mm-hmm. create. And that's,
well, let's talk about that first fucking goal then.
Yes, right? Let's do it. Fantastic team goal.
It's a terrific team goal, and it's a perfect expression of what you're talking about, right?
It's a perfect expression of the offense we want to run. Yeah,
build move some shit in through the wing. The hold up play that then resulted in, and then the wing play creating a wide stretch, and then a perfectly placed pass, and then just and a surgical execution. It's like it's beat for beat what you want to see. It's great. Somebody with no tactical sense, i.e. me, can look at that goal and see, I get it. Because of how it demonstrates, you almost feel like, oh, they're useless against it. When everything happens, what else could they have done? It's like in boxing, you know, when you like, if you're going to move a hand out to catch a jab and it drops your defense on your side, it's like, no, you should have stopped the jab. It's just he's too fucking fast. Right? Like, the opening mm-hmm. was created because it's chess. The opening is created yep. because it must be created, and then it's punished. But there was not ever a... It was a goal produced not by mistakes, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, and it's... You know, we'll talk about Bakar, of course. We avoided it last week. We won't this week. But it shows his value in this system, and especially against yes. a team like that. When we talk about how condensed this match was, two high lines playing against each other. I mean, DC was way more compact than we were even. And the reason, if you watch that goal again, you'll see, like, why is Bakar in our own half? It's because, like, that's where he has to set up to try to make these things happen. And then he does, gets the ball, hold up, leaks it out to Hannes with a great pass. Then Hannes, who has been fantastic when it comes to at least carrying the ball into dangerous areas. I know it's hard to kind of read the game that he has. It's been hard to read him as a player in this system, but there's one thing we know he can do, and it's carry the ball into dangerous spaces. And he's like almost better than most people in the league about it. At least that's what the underlying numbers say. And he takes the ball right through the middle, right? Even on his weak foot. And then, gets it. And then, of course, the underrated thing that is also extremely obvious in this is why do we play inverted wingers? Why is Agustin Ojeda on the left with all his speed and his ability to like work the right touchline? Well, you see it in this play. Hannes is cutting in. What does Agustin do? He doesn't want to create good spacing. He wants to create chaos, and he does by running directly with his fast little feetsies. The goose cuts opposite, makes an almost parallel run to Hannes through the middle, and Akinboni, their baby center back, just like has to follow him because he's the most dangerous player in that moment. So he follows him, and what does Santi do? Well, he knows, because they've probably practiced this 100 times, is to take up the negative space. This is spacing. You want to talk basketball? This is spacing. He takes the negative space left by Agustin Ojeda and gets the ball and slots it in. And that's the play. It's all four of our attacking players all doing exactly what they need to do with their strengths. And that's why that goal and this game as a whole, even though, of course, we had 22 shots and a lot of good chances and only converted two with one of them at the death, even with that, this was so promising in terms of how we can attack these aggressive teams, the ones we have trouble against, why we look so limp against St. Louis, why we can never beat the Red Bull. This is how you do it, and that's what was so promising.
Can we talk specifically about Santi Rodriguez, or rather, more not specifically, the opposite, more broadly about Santi Rodriguez and what he brought to this match? I mean, there is, of course, the emotionally fertile space of like 100th match, joining the Century Club, but also it feels like we're sort of next level with Santi as well in terms of how he's understanding his offensive role on this team, right? We're no longer seeing a Santi who is, he just knows he's got to get the goals. He knows that he has to get mm-hmm. the goals. He knows that somebody has to, and he knows that he can. Mm-hmm. And he's owning that, kind of in a way that we haven't seen him do since it was a little less disciplined and a little less cooperative at the beginning of his tenure with NYCFC. It really feels like he's morphed into an all-around offensive player in a way that is going to, I mean, when I tell you that my heart started singing double-double, we're so far into the season already, it doesn't feel like possible. But at the same time, you know what I mean?
It's possible, for sure, yeah.
What did you see from Santi in this match? Like, I guess just really, did you see the Santi, the sort of mature team lead, old reliable Santi that like the people keep on describing in reviewing matches like this?
Yeah, what I see is more working towards a synergy of how he naturally plays that central position and how we want to play. It's like, how do you play someone like Santi with the two inverted wingers and the strikers we have? And, you know, this is a team where we want a creative number 10. We want a player like Santi on the wing. Just speaking, you know, X's and O's, you want a Santi who can be creative from a wing position and is also very fast and can get by people dribbling. Like, that always made sense, and that's why he worked so well with Maxi playing centrally. But Maxi's not here, and it's like this whole conversation about is Maxi a 10? Is Maxi a 10? I mean, is Santi a 10? Is Santi a 10? And I think we're getting closer to the answer. It's like Santi can be a 10 if the system works for him. And watching this game, you saw Santi much more similar to the player we brought in from Nacional and the player. And that's what we want to see from. That's how he works at the 10, is not trying to imitate Maxi. It's being himself in this kind of system where you have people capable of taking on dribblers wide. You have people who can overlap and underlap very easily because his sense of movement is very good. You know, maybe he's not. Obviously, we know his distribution is perfectly serviceable. He's not some kind of passing merchant like some of the other 10s we see in this league. Of course not. Like a Carlos Gil or a Lucho Acosta or whatever. Like, Lucho Acosta had a beautiful pass just this past week. Or even like a Ricky Puig. You don't see him having that exact level of proficiency when it comes to spraying the ball around. But with the team we have right now and how we're playing, like, just all-out offense, just trying to move the ball with velocity, like, that's where he shines, is 1-2 passing, quick decision-making, moving the ball around the field very quickly to allow players to move very quickly. Like, the point of the system is not so Santi can move the ball around. The point of the system is so other players can move around while Santi has the ball. And, like, when he's moving quickly, that just doubles the efficiency of that kind of play. And that's when he's most comfortable, is kind of in rhythm with the rest of the offense as opposed to being the focal point. And then, by default, he becomes the focal point because he's in the middle, right? He's always in the most dangerous positions, de facto. He's always going to be the most important player on the field if everyone else is running on all cylinders and is used to him playing in that way. And that's when we saw him. And you know, you talk about Nick Cushing, like, how he loves to be a little flowery. He said it was a masterpiece by Santi Rodriguez. Look, I voted Santi second for player of the week. Just to give him a little hat tip for, you know, goal and assist and overall solid play. I'm not going to necessarily say it was a masterpiece. I would hope he's more capable. I hope his ceiling is higher than what we just saw, and I believe it is. But in terms of the most obvious game he's had recently of how he can play, how this system can match his play style, this was the most obvious, for sure.
It's very exciting. It feels like what Santi does is unlock a kind of multifaceted offense at his best, which includes his own confidence in front of goal, and it feels like that's what we're seeing over and over again, or what we could see over and over again if God is good to us. Let's talk about people that God is not being so good to. Munsef Bakrar, broken-hearted Bakrar, they're calling him. It's a real shame, real tragedy, broken-hearted Bakrar. I said to him, Munsef, you gotta pick your head up. you gotta get your head in the game. But I can't do it. I skip it. I tried to do a Trump like a couple days ago for something else, and I also lost my way fairly quickly. So cut this. I know you won't.
I'm not going to. No.
But you should. The point is, brokenhearted Buckrar had his head down. He died like a dog. He didn't die like a dog. He's struggling. He is. He misses a sitter. Is benched almost immediately afterwards. Everybody's trying to console him. Really interesting, I think, reaction from the fan base, who is sort of like, I think it really shows where we're at with this guy, which is, sure, you've still got some complainers or what have you, but there is a recognition that Buckrar is having a productive effect on the offense, and that one of these days the it'll break. You know what I mean? The curse will be lifted, but it was not this night. It doesn't feel like there's a ton more to say except for to analyze the environment around him and how you sort of rescue somebody from the depths of the despair of not being able to deliver on a sitting chance. But what was your take from it?
I agree, and I think it's important. I just want to emphasize what you said. Because the talk around him, obviously we avoided it because we don't want to get into how negative the conversation might have been regarding his production. And like, look, just to preface, it's not good enough. Like, it's bad. Like, we know, we're aware.
You don't want to go in and be like, it's fine. It's okay, yeah, no. It's great.
It's more like, I think it was good to see, and look, I think winning the game and winning multiple games and not losing in a month helps this realization, this collective realization happen. But it did happen, and I'm very happy to see it. As you said, that the conversation shifted from this guy sucks, fuck him, blah, 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 to like, oh, this, I feel bad for him. And like, I'm happy that that's where the collective, my understanding of the collective headspace of NYCFC fans is, because it's even more, it's this black swan event of and even more so now than ever, that every game he's getting better at everything but shooting and getting worse at finishing. Like it's becoming like an opposite effect where he's understanding the game more, working better in combination with all the other attacking players, getting better at pressing, getting himself into more dangerous positions, and yet missing maybe even worse now than ever. And I think that last sitter that he missed, I mean, even it's not even necessarily a sitter, it's more so like he took the shot and missed right in front of goal. And even so, like, even if he had done nothing, Julian might have scored that goal. Like it was so heartbreaking to see it. And I think like that's where the moment broke for him too, right? I think there might have been a lack of recognition of maybe where the conversation should have been in a positive light, because Buckrar had not cracked yet, right? We had not seen him really emotionally express just how awful it feels as a striker to not score for this many games until that miss, where you could tell he was broken. And then you see all the other players recognize that as well, trying to console him for the first time. And like, not to be like, obviously this is really shitty of me to be like, hey, maybe you could have done that earlier, guys. but I don't blame them, because he was acting like he was fine, right? Like they weren't aware maybe of how negative it is. I didn't do it yet, and I was going to. That Santi after the game, like, he had a really good quote about Buckrar, and he was really good after the game, obviously, because like he was in a great mood, but really open more so than ever about Buckrar. He said something to the effect of like, no, like his struggles is like, that's like there's a media narrative about kind of the struggle of Buckrar and the weight that we're all putting on him. But in the locker room, it's the players all still have faith in him because they know how good he is, because he is good, right? At almost everything. Like really fantastic. And the players have more of an appreciation for all the non-finishing stuff than even the fans. So they understand, and they still have faith in him, of course. And so like this idea of like this broken player, of course, weighs a little more heavily on us than them. But I think they also still understand, like, they still got us back. Like, they're not – it's much easier for them, obviously. Like, we did get players saying – during the losing streak, we need to finish. We're not scoring the goals. The players up front need to finish. Like, mm-hmm. you know, players can be fickle beasts too, and it's much easier to be positive when you're winning. But just a side tangent, it was very embarrassing. You know, I always have to have an embarrassing moment every week at the stadium, and this week it was Santi was talking, and the main media person that does the translating wasn't there. For this match. So while Santi was talking, you know, friends of the pod, best of friends, the City Boys, we love them. They were there too. And while Santi was talking, I was translating what he was saying to them. And he was like, and Javi of the City Boys was like, or no, Danny of the City Boys was like, Doug, we know what he's saying. We understand Spanish. What are you doing? Shut up. We can't hear him. I was live translating to people who also speak Spanish, and it was embarrassing for me to do
what
so.
What a show off. What a show off.
It's embarrassing. I was like, why didn't you tell me to shut the fuck up sooner?
That's, well, you know, they wanted to see how far you'd go. They wanted to see how good you did. They had to stop you because you were doing too good.
No, they're better than me. It was bad.
Yeah, I should hope so.
But, you know, also, shout out to them. Love them, of course.
Yes,
it was
yes,
just funny. Homies. That's just one of those embarrassing, like when I hugged Gabraham Sigelman. Just that I can't go a day without embarrassing myself. It's awful.
That's part of your charm, Trey.
So Bakrar.
Yeah. What
now
else,
what?
Okay, that's it. The end. Now what? Like, what's the next move? Is that what you're gonna ask? Yeah. Me, like you do every fucking week, and I still won't have an answer.
It's what the people want, man.
What do you mean now what? Play him again. Do it again.
Okay. I don't know. Jovan's back from vacation or whatever.
Do it again. Same.
And he didn't look bad.
Don't change anything.
Are you sure?
Don't change a damn thing.
Okay.
Like I said, he's productive. He's just not scoring goals.
You don't
goals.
Think he's mentally broken? After
I,
that miss?
I don't think you can predict it. Put him in. If he's living on Suck Shit Avenue for the first 30 minutes, then sub him out.
Take him out, yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? But you can't presume it. You can't presume it. Not unless you see him really fucked up in practice. I would.
You want a little scoopage that
yes,
I heard
obviously.
From someone. I heard from someone, and I fucking, the second the person walked away that I was going to confirm it with, and I forgot to ask them, I realized I forgot, and I feel bad. So I'm going off of one thing I heard. So take it with a grain of salt. But to my understanding, and it could have just been New York traffic or whatever, but it's something that soccer players and soccer managers and things take much more seriously than us normal New York folks, is that our little golden boy, Jovan Mijatovic, might have been a little late to the game. Like, enough that someone mentioned it to me.
Interesting.
Not interesting. A great look. He still got minutes, so obviously it wasn't, like, punishment worthy, but...
No. That's interesting tea, but, you know, there could be a lot of... Maybe
just
it's not a
deal. Just
want to
slip it in there. Whatever.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's something to keep an eye on, surely.
Anything else?
Fernandez. Brace boy.
Love him. We know this.
Yeah, you. I mean, this is your favorite part.
Okay,
of
there
every
is
match
a conversation
because you
to
get to retweet that predictive tweet that you put out.
It's a bit, whatever. Here's the conversation. Is this though? Hannes Wolf is hard to. I personally, I'm only speaking for myself, but I feel like you might feel the same. It's like it's hard to really analyze his impact on the game at an obvious surface level. All his underlying numbers are fantastic, but that was his first assist, was that goal, the first goal with Santi. And like, you need more. Like, we expected a little more production from him this season. At the same time, he seems to fit in well for what we're trying to do. But you got Julian going crazy. Agustin Ojeda also, you know, we saw how important. He scored the goal last week, and then we saw how important he was, at least with his off-ball movement in this match. So, like, how do you navigate? Like, Julian's come off the bench the last 2 weeks. We ran the same lineup back-to-back. Does Julian start? And so it's an interesting question because Agustin Ojeda, he's got that as you like to say, getaway sticks. And do you want that against tired legs? Or do you want a Julian Fernandez, who might not have the pace as any of our other wingers, to go against the tired legs because he can manage the space well? But are you wasting... Are you dealing with 60 minutes without Julian Fernandez and his talent?
It's a
hard conversation.
It's a team-to-team decision, right? I mean, I think one of the really interesting things about the variety of attacking power...
You're so smart, dog. You think you're so dumb.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I'm smart. I think I am so dumb. I think that's exactly right. Blind hog nut sometimes. But it's easy because all of my good points are hedges. That, you know, if you go back and you listen, you'll tell there's a pattern. It sounds like I'm being smart, and really I'm just covering my ass. But I also do think that that's true in this case. That having a variety of attacking skill sets and a system that can take different advantage of those skill sets at different times is kind of one of the genius things that Cushing has put together here, if it works, when it works, is that it gives you a chance to say, like, okay, against this team, we do really need pace. Or against this team, we do really need just, like, a bit of skill because we need somebody who is going to be capable of dismantling a slightly tired but very skilled defense. How much depth does the opposing team have, right, in the tapes? Realistically, is it enough to just sort of punch through them? And I think that that's good. I think that it's one of the reasons that we're not seeing. I think it's one of the reasons that we're not seeing Bakar getting subbed out because, or maybe the lateness is also part of it. And we'll see if we see a lot more like starting with Jovan or with Jovan. I'm correcting that from now on. I am. But that you'll like it. It doesn't. I don't think there's as much of a like competition in starting slots in this side because they will be matched more to the defenses they're trying to beat.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like obviously, like especially when Magno comes back, he returned to full training last week. Like if you're against a low block, low line of confrontation, counter-attacking team, do you want like a Talis Julian sauce lineup to start the match? I don't know. We'll see. I think you're right, though. But the good thing is that all the players we have can play on both wings. It's outside of probably Julian and Magno seem pretty glued to their respective sides, but Wolf and Agustin we know can play either, and Santi as well. So I would love it. At least we have the flexibility to deal with whatever, and I think we're lucky either way. You can tell this game was good. We've been talking about it so long. Really fucking fun match. And again, I just want to go all the way back to 40 minutes ago, where I'm saying like DC was really fun to watch from a technical standpoint, and you have to give Thiago and Burke Risa their flowers, and James Sands has been incredible, just to see him really understand his role in this team and get back to the James Sands of yore has been great. And so good that Matt Freese barely had to do anything this match. It has been really good. Do I have anything else? Do you have anything else?
No. Let's talk some talking points.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
We gotta get into, because this was a great match. It just felt good from top to bottom, and it wasn't all the scoreline. It was also, of course, the first match since the vote passed, and the stadium is locked in. And Trey, you got some firsthand experience of that, right? Our own Trey Fillmore, a reporter on the scene. Feet on the ground, boots on the ground, at the where the groundbreaking for the Valley of Ashes, the whatever, you know, the nickname soon will happen. What was it like doing the site visit?
I mean, it's a bunch of gravel. I could intellectualize how big of a meaning it was, and I will say that I did make a joke to Brad Sims that he smartly did not play with me with about, you know, Passover starting and how we were being delivered our promised land, and he decided to just kind of smartly laugh it off and not build on that bit. I commend him. Of which I got frustrated at, and I said, I'm not insinuating you're Moses. And then he said, yeah, okay.
It's like, all right, dude.
It was an embarrassing day for me, okay? It was... Obviously, it's cool. It's cool because the gravel set aside for our stadium, like, that site is just empty. Like, there's nothing. Because they have to start building. It's huge. And I would say the most fascinating. So yeah, like me and Mike from Blue City and Justin from the outfield, and Hudson River Blue, Andrew there. But also you had the Athletic there. You had a bunch of local media. You had CBS local. You had a bunch of the Chinese Mandarin language news outlets, because they're the communities most affected, of course, and a bunch of other local media. I wish, you know, more of our brethren could have come, and shouts out to them. But it was interesting because, you know, it's like it was more of a traditional kind of press junket kind of thing as opposed to the ragtag MLS shit we're used to. I would say the most fascinating thing was both the architect being there, and him kind of mapping out where everything was in that gravel pit, where the cube would be, everything like that. And most interesting was the NYCFC's chief infrastructure officer, the CIO, who not only works with us on like how we built our new trading facility and everything, but also works with every other City Football Group team on how to best build things. He was very good at describing, you know, getting real detailed about a lot of the stuff, but at the same time, like, he was obviously very City Football Group, and by that I mean, like, talking points, knows how to deflect and knows how to shape the conversation. The most interesting things I learned being at that site are the fact that a big delay kind of in like preparing the space and getting ready to build was how toxic the ground was there. I mean, the amount of cars and oil and waste and things that have just been left to rot there for decades. They had to go 2, 3, 4 feet underground and just dig everything up and throw it away and then cover that all and then put a solid cap on top of the earth and then cover that with all the gravel and stuff, and that it's going to take a long time to start the construction because they have to the structures they have to build to start the foundation are also going to be very deep for similar reasons and things like that. Also talking about like crowd expansion, potential expansion in the future and things like that. It was very clear, like, and we kind of like the way they were talking slowly mentally built the picture of like, it's going to be a tight squeeze, like, which is very cool, by the way. Like, how many urban stadiums do we have in MLS, mm-hmm. right? Where there's buildings that people live in and use next to the stadium. Yeah. That doesn't happen very often in this country because there's so much space in this country.
No, they usually New York stick out different. In the middle of fucking nowhere and hope that it'll turn that place into a metropolitan area.
Exactly. And in this case, we are building the neighborhood around the stadium, and it's going to be a tight squeeze, which is going to be fucking, like, I didn't really intellectualize that until we were there, because standing where the cube is going to be and looking at City Field, it's not close, but it's not far away. Like, it is across the street. It is one block, and it is one street. It is a crosswalk away. So, like, that's such a cool fucking feeling, that urban stadium feeling. Like, when I was walking through Rio, not to brag, And like Lol. Checking out the all the practice facilities for like Flamengo and Fluminense and Botafogo, like they're all built into kind of the city, and like I love that feeling of like, yeah, if someone that lives in the apartment building wants to watch the game, they can. I mean, I don't think the buildings will be tall enough, but they'll at least like the stadium will be out their window, and like that's something you don't get, and I love that. So that was a really interesting conversation. I will say, reading between the lines, this was not told explicitly, but it seemed implicit. The team was hopeful for the what they announced, you know, and what has been discussed as opening, being ready for opening day for 2027. If I was a betting man, based on the conversation I heard and reading the tea leaves, a lot of it depends on some hurdles they have to pass and how quickly some building goes. But if I was a betting man, which I am, I don't know if this stadium will be open opening day. It will certainly be open in 2027. I will guarantee that. But I don't know if opening day, and this is not unique. You know, there's plenty of stadiums that open later in the season. We've seen in MLS recently that some teams have to start away for a lot of the first, you know, beginning of the season, or maybe Yankee Stadium or whatever, that we might not. It's not guaranteed. I'll just say that it's not a guarantee that we'll open on opening day. And I think NYCFC would say the same thing. I mean, that's what they told me.
It's never a guarantee though, right? We see that all the time with stadium openings or any like major municipal projects. And especially in New York, shit goes through so many organizations. Money changes hands in so many different ways. There are a lot of ways that a project can get hung up. So no, nobody should be sitting here expecting great things. Speaking of working all the angles, speaking of backroom deals, you met our mayor.
For the second time now, yeah.
I know. Was it better this time? Did he remember you? Did he say, Trey, my buddy, my homie? Did you bask in his celebrity and his warmth once again? Did you make any jokes to him about being Moses?
That is, I wish. That is the interesting thing, and I remember it from the last time, is like, the second you get in front of the mayor or any high-level politician, doesn't matter soccer, whether it's Mayor Adams, you know, himself or anyone else, there is a level of like charisma or reverence that like just your monkey brain taps into. And it also like is that whatever that like that idea of like when you meet people you maybe disagree with or have negative opinions on, like your dumb brain gets shocked when they're like nice and and mm-hmm. charismatic in person, because your brain can process those contradicting thoughts. I'll say no, this time was very different, because last time we had a lot of time to talk to him and I got to ask him a question, and so did many other people. This time one of his aides walked up to us and was like, which one of you is Blue City Radio? And then Mike's like, that's me. And they're like, okay, so you're going to ask the question and just ask him what he feels about the stadium. And that's it. And he was like, okay. And that was it. And then Mike was like, how do you feel about the stadium? And kudos to Mike to handling the, you know, shouldering that. And then the mayor was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, housing is the goal. Soccer stadium is the goal. In New York, it's goals, goals, goals. And I have the audio somewhere, whatever. It's much better to just generalize. And that was it. And then he did the, you know, the ceremony that everyone saw in the stadium where he just said similar.
Sounds great.
I mean, it's clear, like, obviously, considering his popularity is objective and not subjective within the city. We all saw a recent poll that came out. And also with Moya, like, this is huge for Moya, and we know it. And kudos to him. Like, that is not me saying, like, he's using this politically. He did use every ounce of influence he has to make this happen, and we thank him for it. Mm. But it's obvious, like, this is politics. When something, a $780 million project goes through, and you're a politician that is governing the area responsible, you take credit for it. And they did. And that's what it was all about. So, you know, And that's what happened. And he wore a hat that said Mayor Adams on it, which when I posted those pictures, I got 100 things, messages like, that hat is ridiculous.
Where can
I love it? You know what? I'm going to zag. I love a fucking hat that says, if I was mayor and it said Mayor Fillmore on it, I would wear that
fucking
shit
totally
every
agree.
Day.
Absolutely. Absolutely, positively. I love a ridiculous hat. It's like your mayor is Jonah Scott or whatever his name is. Judah Friedlander from 30 Rock.
Ah, got it. Yep.
Trey, we got to get while the getting's good. I mean, we can. Okay, no, I do want to talk about this. Hudson River Blue put out.
We'll be fast.
What?
We'll be fast.
We'll be fast. We just want to pay a little, you know, homage to the homie. Homage to the homie. NYCFC source is retiring. This is news I got not from Twitter.com, but rather just from the Hudson River Blue feature where they interviewed him and kept him anonymous. We've talked about this gentleman for years, a Twitter personality who did a lot of the same kind of sleuthing that you did, only more extreme, to identify transfer rumors around NYCFC and had some high-profile hits and some high-profile misses. Will we ever forgive him for being wrong about Neymar? Who knows? But you talk to the dude. He's a young man, a young guy, and appears to be pivoting into what hopefully will be a sensational career in athlete agency. Talk to me about what your relationship with NYCFC source is like, and what's your read on his work, now that it's got an end bracket to it.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it short because we're short on time, but I'll say he certainly an interesting person. Obviously young. I mean, he started the NYCFC reporting game when he was like 15. That's crazy. And not like in a negative way, like more power to him. He obviously works in a very unique way, and his soccer opinions, I will say, only in rare occasions, but extreme occasions, we disagree on about certain players, and it, you know, sometimes I have to remind him that I vividly remember watching the 2002 World Cup, which was way before he was alive, and it's like kind of like reminding him about my experience in this whole thing. but and that sounds like a dig, but I'll combine it with this, which is that I'll say this about NYCFC source. Yes, he's retiring from the NYCFC reporting.
Is he 16
game.
Now, or was he 16?
I think he's 17 now, almost 18.
He started it in 2019, dude.
Oh my god, he was 14 or whatever, or younger.
Do that math again.
He was like whatever.
If he's 17 now, he was 12.
Yep. I'll say this, and you know what? It's gonna sound even more ridiculous that I say this, considering what you just said, but it is true, and I believe this with my whole heart. There is no one at the pure journalistic ones and zeros, X's and O's, whatever you want to say, the pure trying, going to get information from high-level individuals and sources. There is no one, certainly within NYCFC media, and I will say, perhaps across a lot of American MLS reporting, that is at the level of stick-to-itiveness and effort and insert adjective there than him. He's so impressive. Like, I talked to him. Just like to be candid, I talk to him all the time. I used to talk to him every day. Like, I talk to him all the time, which I think is important, sharing information, whatever. And I was routinely shocked by who he was talking to. And I have proof. Like, he would send me screenshots. He's not lying. He was talking to high level. It's crazy. High level, as a 15, 14-year-old, high-level executives in MLS across the league at that age. It isn't like you want, like, I can't even, it's hard to even digest. It's almost like it makes sense to go to the agent route. His ability to, like, his can I speak to the manager-ness is at a level, is the LeBron James of that. He's like, he just knows how to get to the most, to the highest person and the most realistic sources about so much. And his Neymar stuff, like, I'll tell you, and we said it on the podcast, like, I heard the same. You know, it's like, every time I would hear something, a whisper, and then he would message me and be like, hey, did you hear this? And give me more details. And I'm like, fuck, man, you're right, because I heard the same thing, but just watered down. Like, you know it. So, I, you know, kudos to him at you know, I don't agree with necessarily the little hints. And this is a product of his age, I'm sure. Like, the little hints and drippings and like teasers. I don't like when reporters tease information. But I don't, you know, that's his age. It's a product of, and,
well, and it's also
philosophy.
But it's also the I would say it's also the model, right? Like, it's also, it's like
true.
It's Twitter is not a journal. It's a gossip rag, right? Like, Twitter is for tea. Twitter is for rumors. This is a person whose job was rumors. And I think, yep, like, and whose medium was rumors. If he had started a blog, right? If he had started a podcast, whatever. If he was coming to the press junkets, sure, absolutely. But that's not actually what you were there for, or what any of us was there for. This is a part of, a healthy part of the ecosystem, or at the very least, it's a part of the ecosystem that will always exist. So at least you've got somebody who is really committed to it, right? The little teasers, mm-hmm, the little page sixes, I'm on board for. Because it's not the same thing as journalism, and I don't think that he really, yep, confused it.
No, I look, man, and if you want to say confidence, like, there's no one more confident than me either. And I look forward to, I look forward to what he does in the new space he's working in, because he is, if anything, you know, confident in what he's doing and how he's going to get things done. So more power to him. And You know, gone are the days of the exciting NYCFC tea rumors. Maybe another teenage savant like him will spring up at some point to fill that hole. But in the meantime, you know, he left an indelible mark of hype. And I just want to, like, underline, like, there is no one that could do what he did. Like, it's shocking. I want to give
That's
him.
Right.
We never on this podcast gave him his flowers in that way. And I just want to say, like, I am in awe of his ability to get general manager's numbers. It is insane. As a child, it's commendable. It is.
Mm-hmm. We shall not see his like again. You know who's like we shall see again, Trey?
Who?
Charlotte. Yeah. Who are coming to New York. They're coming. They're coming too. And will be our first repeat of the season, right? So what are we to expect as far as differences? Have we really changed all that much in the past 2 months? 2 months and change. Will the winning team persist, or will we return to the messy bunch of misfits and early career high ceiling starters that we've grown accustomed to? What do you think? Can we handle Charlotte better now than we did when we began?
I'd hope so. It's almost an unknown, because the last time we played them, if you remember, they scored on us very early and just low blocked the fuck out of us and suffocated us, a team that had no chemistry. And even so, we don't know if we can handle a low block. We have yet to prove that in this season, that we can handle a team playing conservatively or parking the bus, as they say. So it's almost an unknown, but it's exciting. And I would want to say that I'm feeling optimistic, because they have become somewhat of a gilded lily. I don't know what you want to say. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's what you mean, but I look forward to finding out what you do mean.
I'm fan. I'll say it, and you say the expression I'm thinking of. They have been getting, until last week, they have been getting very good results almost by surprise or by skin of their teeth or by illusion almost. Like culture and brotherhood and whatever, and this kind of revamp of chemistry and the fact that they cleaned house and got rid of two DPs and have brought in some high quality players. Like, even though it's not clicking, even though their talent floor might be lower than many other teams in the league, they were stealing results. And then last week they got exposed. At home in Charlotte, Minnesota came in and played this off-balance 3-in-the-back, 4-in-the-back, something extremely similar to what we'd like to play when we play 3-in-the-back. Just kind of overwhelmed them tactically, and then in terms of strategy, the counterattack for Minnesota was so huge that the Charlotte's quality just allowed enough Minnesota counterattacks to take advantage and just pile on. And they didn't know how to come back from the multiple punches that were thrown at them. So I'm feeling confident because, as we saw against DC United most recently, we know how to counterattack. We know how to take advantage of teams that have a little too much dip on their chip. So we just can't let them score early. I think we are guaranteed a win if we don't let them score early. And that's going to be the key to this whole match. Do you have the idiom or whatever I was thinking of?
No, I actually have no idea what you
okay,
mean.
Okay, I don't know. Whatever.
Maybe like a...
paper... what's that word? Paper...
yes, a paper tiger. That's exactly what you mean. Yes. Well done. Or a paper anything. I think a paper moon also counts. It's only a paper moon. But maybe that's only for grifting with your daughter. I guess the sort of follow-through question is, like, do you think that this team has the guts to score early? I mean, we saw such an aggressive first half from NYCFC. That it would really take a very astute, I think, Charlotte, with a pretty limited game tape for what this team looks like when it's operating successfully, to shut down the channels that we're using. That plus, of course, like, if we're starting Bukrar, is he spiritually able to put the pedal to the metal for yet another week? And if we're starting Mijatovic, does that shake up the system enough that leaves openings for Charlotte to take control of the game?
Yes. And the X factor here is Liel Abada, the Israeli forward that they brought in recently, who is just slowly starting to get acclimated, has not done much, has not been pretty productive, but is starting to show signs. I think it's funny, culturally funny, if they have Abada and we have Bakrar playing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just poking at something that might not exist, but I think it's interesting. I think
sure,
it's interesting.
Sure. Headcanon, at the very least.
Headcanon, that's what I'm going for. And I can't, I would be remiss not to say the return of the great Woody. Woody, former NYCFC employee, and we love and miss him. And it was great to see him last time in New York, and he'll be back.
Yay. What's your scoreline, Dre?
2-0 again. 3 in a row. Keep it going. What about you?
That would be fun. I'll co-sign that. That would be a lot of fun. It would be really nice. It would be really nice to take 9 points from the last 3. Truly. Isn't it funny in a sport with draws, the way a winless streak can turn into a lossless streak, like, overnight?
It's MLS, baby.
I know. It's really, it's goofy. It's just like the way the language that gets passed around and then regurgitated by us too. It's just silly to observe. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls
Pod. Blue Balls Pod.
You know the deal, folks. We've said it a million times. Check the link tree in the bio for merch and a tip jar. We appreciate it. Every time we see you, enter the chat to give us money. But if you can't do that, just give us a kind word at the match, at the tavern afterwards, whenever you like. We love to hear from you. Engage with our posts, review our shit, you know. We love you, and we're in love with you, and we will see you next week on the other side of Charlotte. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.